Hello, hello to the lighthearted writers out there or the heavy-hearted among you who may be looking for an escape from all that ails us these days. I am Brooke Warner, one half of this right-minded team, here with Grant Faulkner, who makes the team whole. Grant, it's been a minute since we've had a romance writer on the show, and we're entering into this conversation from a pretty specific angle of pursuing lighthearted writing, which to me makes what we're talking about today applicable to other genres, including memoir and commercial fiction, even poetry and children's books and YA and middle grade, because a lot of people are looking to integrate lighthearted writing into their stuff, even if it's heavy emotional writing that you might be doing. And today's guest, Neely Tubadi Alexander, says in her bio that she is seeking to tell lighthearted stories with diverse characters and strong women who pursue both love and careers. I love that orientation, of course, and I want to acknowledge the many writers out there who want to write lighthearted stories. So, Grant, based on what you write and what I know about your reading habits, I think we're pretty similar. We're drawn to the darker stories and tales. I rarely read romance and rom-com myself, which is why it's such a breath of fresh air to have on guests like Neely and to have read her book this week, you know, because it's a reminder that there are all these stories out there that fall under this umbrella of fun, brain candy, escapist literature. So I guess I want to start by asking you why we're not reading more of this ourselves, you know, because like I said, I enjoyed Neely's book, and it felt like that same hit that I get when I just want to be like, oh, I just want to veg out and watch Netflix tonight, and in a good way, you know?
Just as you ask that, I'm like, what's wrong with me? Why aren't I seeking out happiness and lightheartedness, especially these days?
We're gluttons for punishment with our reading habits and everything else.
I think so, you know, and it's such an interesting question, and I literally don't know how to answer it because it is a proclivity I have. It's like a magnet. I'm just drawn to that type of reading experience. You know, I also like anchovies. Most people don't, so I don't know. But every once in a while, I'll read a lighthearted novel, and, you know, I'll thoroughly enjoy it, but I just don't seek them out. But that said, I like your Netflix analogy because I have increasingly sought out lighthearted movies and shows, especially since the pandemic, and they literally cannot make enough rom-coms for me. I want to start a new nonprofit, the Rom-Com Institute, dedicated to producing more rom-coms because I can't get enough. And I think there's a scarcity of good ones. But so with that said, I just want to affirm my support for stories that provide escape because we often need escape. It's very valuable, and escape can be very healthy and nourishing.
So true. Yes. And, you know, last time we talked about romance on Right Minded, it was with Angelina Lopez. And we discussed the fact that the genre gets kind of a bad rap, which romance writers shouldn't care about at all, because romance is a wildly successful genre with a voracious readership who are always looking for new books. But that's just by way of reminding people, you know, that we've touched upon this subject. Today, I actually want to focus more on the positive impacts of writing stuff that's lighthearted. You know, we spend so much time on the show talking about the challenges that writers face. Just last week, we had Javier Zamora on the show, and he was, you know, his subject was writing through childhood trauma. And since I work with memoirists, I can say that at least anecdotally, most memoirists do have some trauma that they're working through. And so I certainly understand what draws a person to write their memoir. There's often a pull, and for a lot of people, that means that they can't not write their memoir. And I am curious, Grant, what you feel drives fiction writers. Like for a lot of novelists and poets, I think it's like this burning fire, maybe sometimes an ember, but still that like drives them to write and create and make sense of the world. A lot of them have probably been writing since they were little kids. You know, you hear that a lot. And where serious literature is concerned, you have these revered writers who occupy a mythical place in our culture. And I'm thinking of folks like Joan Didion, Toni Morrison, John Irving, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Ray Bradbury, you know, the list goes on. But since you're a person who knows what it's like to strive and toil in this space, you know, what do you think drives the serious writer, you know, the one who's not coming at this endeavor with lighthearted motivation?
I recently read the novel The Invulnerables by one of my favorite authors, Sigrid Nunez, who I just can't praise enough. And in the novel, which is a type of autofiction, her main character theorizes that every novel is about loss. And perhaps that's what divides the heavy-hearted novels from the lighthearted ones. You know, the heavy-hearted novels are about loss in some sense. And I think the lighthearted ones are more about the hope of getting something, you know, the hope of being whole in the end and fulfilled. And I think that's maybe why I like the heavy-hearted ones, is I don't necessarily believe that we're ever truly whole, or if we are, you know, that feeling is fleeting. So we're always yearning or longing or regretting something. And as Sigrid Nunez wrote, something's missing, and we write toward that thing that is missing. But then after a day of writing about loss, I rush to Netflix and look for a rom-com to watch.
Yeah, I totally get that, Grant. I mean, you're just looking for escape, as we're talking about, you know, after a long day of heaviness. And the writers I've worked with in the past who've had a more lighthearted approach seem to just want to have fun with their stories. You know, they're not so concerned about what the literary world thinks of their work. This is probably in part what it means to be this kind of writer, because romance writers are not running in the same literary circles as literary prize winning authors, usually anyway. And I think there's a real freedom here for a lot of reasons. You know, the stories are upbeat and fun, although as Neely is going to talk to us about, you know, some of them certainly center heavy topics. I know for the writers themselves, you know, with rom-com and romance, that it is more fun though, and it's fun to escape into. And they do, these kinds of books usually do have a formula, like the love interests that you're rooting for all along end up together. You know, Neely also is going to speak to the slow burn, which I loved how she talked about that. So stay tuned for that. It's an important aspect of, like, you know, getting people intrigued and, you know, wanting more and reading more. And her new book is called In a Not So Perfect World. The protagonist is Sloane Cooper, and she's in her 20s. She's got a lot going on. You know, she's late on her rent. She recently broke up with Zane, who she was pining for. You know, she's trying to become a video game designer. And then in an effort to get over her heartbreak, Sloane takes on a dare to kiss someone in a bar, you know, on the dare of a friend. And this is when we meet the love interest, Charlie. And like all good romances, there are twists and turns, you know, the slow burn, like I said, the forced intimacy, mm-hmm. you know, because Charlie asks Sloane to accompany him on an all expense paid vacation to Turks and Caicos. But of course, while she's there, she has to design and build a video game as part of a final interview process that she's doing for the job of her dreams. So you've got high stakes and, you know, love interest in a very vacation-y spot that I would love to transport to right this moment. And so, you know, it was tempting, Grant, while reading this book, to consider what it would be like to do this kind of writing. Like, mm-hmm. if we would have more fun, like we're saying, try something different than anything I've ever even attempted. And so I'm curious, have you tried to write something lighthearted, or would you?
Actually, making the life of a writer, so it just sounds so wonderful, Brooke, you know.
It depends on the genre.
Write lighthearted, fun things and be lighthearted and fun. Yeah, you know, despite my morose ways, I've actually written the occasional lighthearted story. And in particular, I've written a couple of screenplays, a comedy that I wrote ages ago with Heather Mackey, my wife. And then I'm working on a zany rom-com script right now with a friend of mine. And once I wrote the beginnings of a somewhat comedic satirical novel, I think, you know, that was maybe 5 years ago or so, but then it just wasn't working out and I dropped it. So I've actually thought about writing a romance just for the heck of it, you know, just to experience it, to try on a new self and see what I'd be like in a new genre, but I haven't quite taken that leap.
Yeah. And I don't know if I actually would. It would be a perfect thing for NaNoWriMo though, you know, mm-hmm. just like taking a turn at it one November, just for the hell of it. You know, and there are a fair number of writers on the She Writes list who turn to fiction, this kind of fiction specifically, you know, genre fiction, romance, after their memoirs. And I'm thinking of one writer in particular who's done some romance writing on the heels of her kind of heavy memoir. And she flat out told me it was way more fun and the romance is selling better. So I'm not too surprised to hear that. You know, we already know the stats on romance are good. Mm-hmm. But romance is also just becoming a more go-to genre. The younger generation of readers is not at all embarrassed to be seeing these books. And that used to be part of the stigma. Writers like Colleen Hoover are also making it so that writers of these books are more on par with celebrity writers in other genres, which I think is a big part of it. And it just seems to me, for the struggling writer who's, you know, just trying to get their work out there, or who's had lackluster sales in another genre, that maybe it would be cool to try your hand at something different and see what happens.
Yeah, and readers would be another reason to go for it, Brooke. You know, we recently did a book trend about the uptick in LGBTQ romance and talked about how new imprints are being created just to accommodate romance readers and their appetite for new books. And I found this a couple of fun stats along those lines. Romance readers usually finish a novel within 7 days, and 46.4% of romance readers read at least one novel per week, which is a lot.
Wow.
And 78.3% of romance readers read more than one novel per month. So let's just say that the market is voracious.
And that is all good motivation for a writer who's trying to figure out if this might be a good space to wade into. So we are going to get some tips from Neely about what it's like to be a romance writer in the first place and maybe how you break into it and how to think about it. And we'll keep saying thanks to all the readers out there for growing this genre and keeping it on our radar. We will be back in just a sec. Welcome back, everyone. I'm thrilled to introduce Neely Tubadi Alexander, who's originally from the Seattle area and resides in Arizona with her husband and children. Her debut novel, Love Buzz, won the Zibby Award for Best Beach Read and was hailed by Good Morning America as the perfect escapist read. Absolutely delightful. Booklist declared her an exciting new romance writer. And her new novel is In a Not-So-Perfect World. Welcome, Neely.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, us too. You know, we loved something you said in your bio. I guess it's another bio that I have for you that said that you seek out lighthearted stories. So I wanted to start here because we interview a lot of serious writers. And I don't want to assert that there's not seriousness involved in being a romance or a rom-com writer, but I want you to speak to this ethos of lightheartedness and how you see yourself or position yourself as a writer, you know, alongside writers who might be writing upmarket or literary fiction. And I guess what I'm really wondering is if you're having more fun.
Well, I like to think so. You know, there's a reason that romance sells the way that it does and dominates the charts, if you will, in terms of sales for books in general, right? The genre is consistently at the top. And I think it goes to show that people really seek out comfort in reads oftentimes. And especially through the pandemic, we saw those numbers spike significantly, right? And even for myself, I found myself kind of staying away from really heavy books because the world was so heavy. And unfortunately, it still is. And so, you know, more and more, it feels like an escape and people are looking for fun and an opportunity to really just be able to still have a story that has some depth, like you said. And more in contemporary romance in particular, we are seeing stories. Emily Henry is a great example. You know, Beach Read has topics about cults and, you know, dealing with loss. And so does Love Buzz. And this book, In a Not So Perfect World, kind of does the same. So more and more, we're seeing depth in the category as well, which is exciting.
I know, Neely, I'm one of these people who got an MFA, and there's this huge MFA industrial complex, as I call it, you know, with MFA programs, you know, nearly in every university or college, and residencies seem to be everywhere, or there are a lot of them available to support writers. And so I'm just kind of curious about, you know, the track for a romance writer and what brought you to this genre. And then are there supports like this, you know, classes or residencies just in particular for romance writers?
Yeah, I don't have an MFA. I don't have any of sort of the accolades or education that a lot of authors do. I think from a romance perspective, a lot of what you find is heavy romance readers. And, you know, like anyone, we are consumers of our genre and consumers of fiction and of storytelling. And so for me in particular, a lot of that was learned through understanding the genre and the expectations around it. But that came with reading, and that didn't come necessarily with formal education. I think it more so depends on the type of person you are, the type of writer you are. I didn't do well in school. I don't really, you know, read craft books. I have them on my shelf, but I don't necessarily, I'll flip to the pages that I think are helpful. So I'm probably not the best example of, you know, what those would be. But there's, I think more than anything, though, there is community and there is support in that perspective. And that's really what I've, at least for my own path, that's what I've relied heavily on.
It's inspiring on the one hand, though, because I think for a lot of people, they feel this intimidation, you know, and your writing is great. You know, your story is fast paced. And, you know, I was just thinking about romance in general and like the interaction that you have to have with your readers too, you know, and how, I guess, the expectation to some degree that you interact with your readers, you know, and also the pace at which romance writers are writing because your readers are so voracious. And it seems like Colleen Hoover is probably the gold standard in this space in terms of her fan base and how she interacts with people. I'm curious about those expectations, you know, just speaking to sort of the marketing side of it, like, do you have to have a big author platform existing to be able to get a book deal for a romance? And then like, are you currently cultivating your audience? I've seen your Instagram, so I know you are to some extent, but what is that like, you know, both pre and post publication?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely beneficial, but I was pleasantly surprised to see that it wasn't expected. I had zero platform. I had a private Instagram that had, you know, 200 followers when I got my book deal. So I was happy to see that that wasn't a prerequisite or something that people were really considering or looking at. And most debut authors, I got to know a lot through my debut year, just because we were all kind of on the same path. And I found that most were in the same situation where they were starting to build their platform for the first time throughout their debut year. So I don't know that it's necessarily a requirement or an entry point for getting a deal, but it certainly does benefit you. And I think especially in romance, it's because most romance authors are writing a lot of books, right? A book a year or something similar to that. And a lot of the successful ones, I should say. And so there is this repeat consumer relationship that exists in romance, and it exists across the board, but especially in romance. If, you know, we're seeing backlist selling hotter than it ever has before. You find an author you like, and then you go buy all of their books, right? So we've seen that more and more. And so the easier you are to find, the easier you are to connect with, I think does make a difference, but it's also very saturated, right? So it has to be authentic, and it has to feel like not a chore, and it can be overwhelming. So I can say that I have not been, you know, I've never felt pressured or, you know, directly asked to do anything from a social media perspective, but I have been told, you know, that they've seen things that I've done and that they enjoy it. So yeah, it's not been as much pressure as I think perhaps some people may think that it is.
Well, that's interesting. If I could ask a follow-up question on that front, like romance is just an interesting genre, you know, in terms of like the characters, or, you know, people kind of get very into the things that they're reading, and they may expect a follow-up, you know, or expect you to like be engaging with them on something to that extent, you know, on your Instagram or whatever. Are you thinking about it in that way, you know, in terms of building out for future books? Like, is there any pressure in that regard, or is it a little more fly by the seat of your pants in terms of what you're trying to promote?
Do you mean in terms of writing series or books that are connected?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't think I'm the type of person that could write an 8-book, you know, series and follow it. I don't read them, and I don't think I could write them. Usually by the time a book is done, you've read it so many times as an author, I'm sick of the characters. I want to move on to something else. There's another idea that's just sort of, you know, nagging at me and wants to come out that I'm ready to move on to. And I'm probably more prematurely than I should. So I don't know that I would ever be that type of author. I think the ones that can, it's really, really impressive. I just wouldn't want to live in that world for that long. And especially for romanticy, which is super hot right now, you know, you spending all of that time with world building, it makes sense to have several books set in that world. And readers respond really, really well to that.
Well, Neely, I'm interested because your novels are full of action. And I'm curious about what your considerations have been around plot and having a very plot-driven story and characters, because, you know, they have to be characters you're rooting for and wanting to end up together. And so in your writing, does it start with the story or start with the characters, and how does it all mesh together to create a plot?
I think romance gets a bad rap sometimes that it's perhaps easier to write because we know how it's going to end, or, you know, to some extent know how it's going to end. And the reality is writing believable tension and romantic connection between two characters is really, really challenging, and it's really difficult, and it takes doing it well. And we probably all read a book where we were supposed to believe, you know, that there was romantic interest and we didn't necessarily feel it on the page. And so getting someone to feel that is is really challenging. And it is a skill that romance writers in particular have that perhaps someone else doesn't. And so to me, from a plot perspective, I listen to a lot of thriller and mystery when I'm editing, because I think they're great for pacing. And like a lot of writers, I've heard a lot of writers say they try not to, you know, read in their genre when they're editing in particular, because, you know, it can get in your head or influence your style. So I really like to listen to thriller from a pacing perspective, and short chapters and cliffhangers, and, you know, it keeps you kind of top of mind for that. But overall, I tend to start with plot, and then character development comes in third, fourth drafts, and it just gets a little bit deeper every time. I'm a pantser, so I make it a little bit difficult for myself. And so that first draft is really just me getting to know the characters and who they are and telling myself the story. And then I start to go, like I said, a little deeper every time.
Well, one of the things that people love about your book, like if you look on Goodreads, and I felt this way too, is the slow burn, you know, that came up again and again. And so I was curious to know, especially because you just said it's kind of hard to do those dynamics. Is that something that you have had to learn, you know, are you naturally good at it in terms of building that kind of tension, especially sort of like the romance sort of passionate part of the relationship? Or is that something that's come more in revision?
Yeah, I really believe that writing is a skill, not a talent. And we may have talent at a line level, but storytelling is learned. And especially for me, I had to learn how to storytell. I thought because I could write a few pretty sentences, that meant that I could write a book. And that's not the case, right? You have to learn the art of storytelling and how to craft story in and of itself. And I vastly underestimated, I think, in the beginning, what that meant, what it looked like, and all of the components of that. So the slow burn really is this push-pull of give a little bit, pull back, give a little bit more, pull back. And so that by the time you get to a point of, you know, whether it's a sex scene or an interaction that feels like a payoff in some capacity, you've been waiting for it and yearning for it just the same way that the characters have. And so to me, that is a lot of that push and pull and leaving the reader hopefully wondering, is this the moment that it's going to happen? Well, crap, no, it didn't. And then I have to, you know, keep reading to see when it, if and when it does. So I think the slow burn also is an opportunity to see in real time how two people connect and the things that people connect over and what those look like for two different characters, because it can be different for everybody. Oftentimes it's a connection point that is sort of this kismet type of situation or feeling of, oh, you've experienced something really similar to me, even though we grew up or, you know, have lived completely different lives.
I love that. And I agree. I mean, it is a skill set and you can feel it in the work, which is great. And it does, it's propulsive. I wondered if you could also speak to us about your commitment to diverse characters. It's an important thing in literary spaces in general, but how are these conversations happening with your agent or with your publisher? And I'm just curious, like, is it the case that you're coming in and saying, I'm committed to that and that's what they're looking for? Or are the conversations more like they're saying, hey, we'd like this kind of character and this kind of destination for your next book?
It honestly isn't that much of a conversation. I'm a first generation Indian American. And so my parents were born in India. They immigrated here in the 70s. And so, you know, I can only write from my point of view and my experience. And even in my query letter, I remember saying that I wanted to tell diverse stories where they were still love stories first, and that we could look at the diversity secondarily. In 2020, we saw a huge shift in publishing and a real focus on diversity, which was great, but we didn't get it right all of the time. And a lot of what happened was that diverse authors were pigeonholed into telling stories about what it's like to be Black in America or what it's like to be, you know, Indian and fall in love. And we took away the opportunity for it to be first a love story in the romance genre, and secondarily, that they happen to be diverse characters. And that was important to me, not because they were, because I didn't want to highlight or spotlight the diversity, but because I wanted people to, I wanted the books to feel accessible. And I think we, in some instances, what we saw publishing do was make these diverse books not feel accessible and feel like they were only meant for a certain pocket of readers. And that was unfortunate. And so my goal really with diversity is to make it, have the representation there, of course, but also for it to feel really accessible.
Well, Neely, a lot of our listeners are aspiring authors, you know, writers who want to be published and successful in their genre. And now that you've written two romance novels, I'm curious what your advice would be for romance writers in particular, you know, not all writers, but romance writers. What would you tell them?
Oh, gosh, I don't know if it's different or specific for romance. I would say read in the genre is a big component, right? I think we know more than we might know we know in, you know, just subconsciously as we consume. And, you know, someone could tell you what a third act breakup is, or, you know, what the soggy middle looks like, or what the dark night of the soul moment is in most story, whether it's film, whether it's TV, whether it's a book they read, because we've consumed this type of storytelling for so long. So I would say to just pay attention to those things and really read in the genre, and not only focus on the books that you like, but focus on why you like them and what are the things that you like about them, and try to emulate those things. I think early on, I know for me and for people that I've met along my journey, early on, there was sort of this, and I don't know why this exists, but this idea that you have to be kind of really different and unique and not like anything else that exists. And the reality is, it's good to be familiar, especially in this space. And so being able to compare yourself to a specific author that you feel like your writing is similar to, that's a good thing. So I think being able to embrace more of that and really understand where you fit in the marketplace is important.
Oh, great advice, Neely. Thank you. And good luck with this book. It's a lot of fun, and I know it's going to find tons of readers. So we appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with today's book trend after this short break. So, Brooke, I want to talk about an emerging genre in writing. I'm always so, gratified that there's genres out there yet to be discovered and developed. And this one comes from TikTok's popular book talk channel, which has been buzzing about a new genre called romantasy. And that is spawning, you know, whole new sections in bookstores. In short, it's a story that mixes dragons with magic and romance. So you can't lose with that combo, I don't think. I might throw in a little time travel and some extraterrestrials as well, perhaps.
Yeah, I love this genre blending, and Neely actually mentioned it during the interview, right? Mm-hmm. It's another one of those like TikTok Colleen Hoover types of moments. Some of the best-selling authors include Rebecca Yarros, Sarah Moss, Jennifer Armentrout. I just read a piece, in fact, with the headline, "Is Sarah Moss the Next J.K. Rowling?" It's interesting because it's one of those genres that supposedly captures two for the price of one. And as Rebecca Yarros puts it in a CBS feature that she recently did, she said, "The romance speaks to the women and the men come for the dragons."
Yeah, so I think that affirms that men are still from Mars and women are from Venus, to quote a best-selling book title from way back, or maybe it's the opposite. But romanticism brings them together into one story, so who can argue with that? And Yarros actually credits the pandemic and TikTok for lifting the genre up, and I think it's interesting how often we hear this, but the pandemic changed us in many ways, and people are still looking for escape, obviously. And Yarros says that's why this double escapist genre is thriving.
Yeah, and bookstores are pushing tables of romantasy novels to the front of the shops. And I've read that both grownups and teenagers alike are posting long videos about their favorite romantasy books on TikTok. And many of them highlight Sarah Moss, who's being called the genre's reigning queen. And she's already sold 38 million books. So just to put that into context, J.K. Rowling has sold about 600 million. So she's got a ways to go to catch up. But Sarah is young, and that is a pretty eye-popping number in its own right. Here's what a Vox writer had to say about Sarah's A Court of Thorns and Roses series. "These books go down like candy, silly and frothy and compulsively readable. Everyone in A Court of Thorns and Roses is beautiful. Everyone is attractively damaged. Everyone is pining with love for some inaccessible someone else. I read nearly 2,000 pages in a couple weeks." What do you think, Grant? An endorsement to be sure.
Definitely. I am so happy for Moss and all of the writers working in this genre. And when I hear hear things like this, it just begs the question of why I chose to write literary fiction and sell all of 38 books, some to my mother. No dragons, no silly and frothy, but hey, we need all kinds of stories, and that's our mission here at Right Minded, to celebrate stories and explore the writing process and do all that by having a conversation with you all. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with a silly, frothy writer or a dark and moody writer or someone in between. No matter who they are, I know we'll learn something about writing and be inspired. So see you next week.